Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Run to Daylight Football Funcast with your host, Todd Burrows.
Welcome to the latest installment of the Run to Daylight podcast. I'm your host, Todd Burrows. Thanks for joining. I'm going to be joined in a couple seconds by Joe Pano again. He's becoming a regular contributor to the podcast, which I appreciate. Tonight, we're going to be talking about defenses. It's based off an article I did on football diehards. I am not a natural writer. I admit that right from the start. I'm actually thinking about taking some classes. But I did put some thoughts down on defenses and how to draft them in MFL 10s that I think will be helpful to anyone who's like me and would probably rather listen than read something. And it'll be fun to get Joe's thoughts on what I wrote as well. But if you want to go to Football Diehards and look up the article, the way to find it is to go to the main page, and then under resources, you go down and you find Diehard staff. You find my picture if it doesn't melt your computer screen, and then you'll go in and you'll find the article on drafting MFL 10s. And defenses. And without much further ado, Joe, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Why don't you tell the folks at home? Yeah, you said you had a flash flood.
Yeah, I'm drying off right now. I'm having a beer. I'm drying off because we had a crazy flash flood. I was in traffic for about 2 hours, and by traffic, I mean I was pretty much floating my Oregon Trail wagon across the river trying to make it home. But I'm here. I'm here, and I got a beer, so I'm good.
Well, the good news is we're both doing a lot better than Jeremy Maclin today.
That's true. Very true.
That one caught me by surprise. How about you?
Well, I hadn't had much time to digest that news, but yeah, it caught me off guard. I kind of caught a glimpse of it, and I saw people talking about it on Twitter, and, some of my early MFL 10 Jeremy Maclin shares are shower crying right now.
Well, I everyone can overreact. I mean, he's going to sign somewhere. It's just a matter of how quickly and what role we think he can get. I mean, if he ends up in a place like Baltimore, those shares might even be worth more. But what I wanted to kind of talk on a little bit was, how gangster is Andy Reid? You go to the guy's wedding 2 weeks ago. Now, in the back of your mind, when you go to this guy's wedding, the whole time you're thinking you're there, you got to be thinking that you're going to cut this guy. And, like, what's the move, right? You're going to cut him. But it's like, well, I can't cut him before the wedding. And then, well, I can't cut him, like, right after the wedding. That just won't look good. So you wait 2 weeks, and then you cut him. So I think that's pretty gangster. How about you?
He's a thug, man. He's a thug. No, I didn't even know that, honestly. I'm just kind of getting into the news. I didn't even know the story. So, that is pretty thuggish.
It takes a special kind of person to go to someone's wedding. And I guess the envelope that Andy gave him was probably a little thicker. Jeremy was like, man, Andy really took care of me. Because he knew you were going to be unemployed in 2 weeks.
You got to watch out for that walrus.
I saw a picture of him when he was first coming up and coaching. He was a good-looking guy. He was thin, had the mustache. I was like, that's Andy Reid. Oh, my gosh. So I've had a lot more, I've put a lot more thought into Andy Reid over the last week probably than I have over Andy Reid in quite some time. You know, Twitter's already, you know, going back and forth, as Twitter does, about how this will shake out with the rest of the Chiefs. And I know we didn't plan for this, but I will mention to the people who are out there, someone on Twitter, a few people mentioned that Kelce had his best games when Macklin was hurt last year. So it probably boosts Kelce, and it probably boosts Tyreek Hill. And I have, I think Tyreek Hill's like the only guy in the top six rounds who I have zero shares of.
Man, I got a ton of Tyreek Hill. I think he's.
You
got to
be feeling pretty good then.
Yeah, I guess I am. Thank you. I think he's my. Let's see. It's probably like my top one of my, in my top five.
What was the thought of, you know, what was your thought in putting him up so high? You know, why were you so high on him earlier?
Well, I think I would say a good portion of those shares are early on, you know, when I was really drafting pretty heavily and things like that. Pre-draft, I was kind of, you know, speculating that some of the touchdown regression that people were, you know, talking about how efficient he was, you know, I was thinking would maybe level out with a little bit more involvement in the offense, you know, getting a little bit, still getting some rushing work and stuff like that. Like, I mean, he's a dynamic talent. Andy Reid, you know, kind of made some comments later on about getting him more involved and, you know, in the slot and getting him more involved in the offense and things like that. And I just figured Jamaal Charles is going to be out. So, you know, you probably want to get a more dynamic, you know, Jamaal Charles-like athlete on the field more, you know, and it's the second year. So, I don't know. I just, to me, it made sense. I didn't have a problem with drafting him, you know, in the late fifth, early sixth round, stuff like that. So, I mean, I slowed down a little bit with him. But, yeah, he's probably in my top five, top six receivers. And now his price is even cheaper. So, I mean, you can get him in like the mid sixth, sometimes seventh round. So I'm fine with that.
Not unless you draft him tonight. You know, you come up on the clock and he's still there. If you don't get him tonight, I imagine he'll be in the fourth round before we know it. My thought about him was this, and I just felt like that he was a guy who, he's not a big guy. And dynamic guys like that, you know, I just have a hard time spending an early draft pick on smaller guys like that. So that was part of it. Part of it was just the whole offense is kind of sluggish. But I do think they'll manufacture touches for him, and if he's playing, he will get the targets and he can do big things with them. So I've got a little bit of a knot in my stomach right now that I didn't take any Tyreek. I got to be honest.
Hey, I'm happy to be your shoulder to cry on, Todd, with 1D. hey, but you know the thing about him is last thing about him is this is best ball, man. This is what we're talking about. We're looking for guys that are going to put up those big weeks. We're not, you know, I wouldn't feel as comfortable with him on a week-to-week basis. I mean, yeah, I would now that Macklin's gone too, but still, I mean, this is best ball. He's perfect for best ball. I don't get the hesitation.
No, it's not only who is he. You know, I can get a lot of good best ball, you know, the guy who might give you 3 20-point weeks, I can get that for you. You know, I can get that later. I mean, when you look at where Tyreek Hill is going, Martavis Bryant is going two picks later, and I've got a pretty good amount of Martavis. I would say that I'm going to look real quick. But Martavis, so I guess my point is if I'm going to take a risk, you know, a guy like Martavis I think gives you all the upside with, you know, the ability to do it on a regular basis, you know, with his size. I own 15% of Martavis. I wish it was a little bit more. Let's see if I snuck in. I snuck in one Hill share out of 65 so far. So talk about a Coke and Peg.
I'm the opposite with you. I think I barely have any Bryant, and I'm feeling, you know, a little bit squeamish about that.
Yeah. Well, and again, you know, one of my big focuses from my earlier article, which I don't think we'll probably have time to cover now. Maybe we'll do that on another episode, on supercharging your MFL-10s. You know, I haven't been – I've been too risk-averse. And so this year, most guys that have that big upside but have risk, I'm taking, you know, 10 to 15% of because I don't want to miss out. And, of course, the one that I didn't was Tyreek Hill. So let's pivot off of that discussion, but it was topical. I thought it was good that we get into it a little bit. We're going to dig into defenses. And in my article, I kind of made the point that defenses, everyone hates taking defenses. I think when you get to that, like, 17th round of an MFL-10, you almost get a little depressed when you come up on the clock because it's like, oh, I got to pick a defense. Do you kind of get that feeling too?
You know, I have mixed emotions. I love defenses. I love, like, analyzing defenses. And but at the same time, I like you said, I hate taking them. I really, on rare occasion, will take anything. I mean, 17th round, I think, is the earliest I'll go. I think, you know, kind of going back to Tyreek Hill, I think you can make a case, you know, to take the Chiefs and things like that with having Tyreek Hill, you know, there to return kicks as well. It certainly helps out. But man, there's so many guys that I'm looking to take and fill out my rosters in those, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15th round that I'm just not willing to do that. I feel very comfortable with my ability to find defenses that are left behind. So that's kind of how I roll.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success, you know, as much as it's kind of boring, I guess almost boring, you know, it's fun to look for running backs and wide receivers. It's kind of boring to take defenses. You know, it's like taking your medicine. It's like, you know, it's good for you. You know, you need it. But you really would prefer, you know, like if they got rid of defenses tomorrow, I think a lot of people who do MFL-10s would be perfectly content. I've been pretty good with defenses 2 years ago. See, I'm willing to draft defenses in the 16th round if I think I'm getting an edge. 2 years ago, I had a good bit of Denver's defense, and you could get them in the 16th round. Last year, the Vikings were my kind of target in that 16th round. But I wanted to kind of how I got on this path of really analyzing everything happened when I started looking into defenses. And I found something that was really very interesting. And it was, we all know that you don't want to take a defense earlier than the, you know, we can argue 16th round or 15th round, but you'll see guys taking defenses in the 12th, 13th, and 14th, and 15th round. I mean, you agree with me, Joe. That's too early, correct?
Yeah, I can't do that. Yeah, definitely not. There's so many other players to fill out right there.
Yeah, your opportunity cost. And the truth is the defenses are very volatile. There's been a lot of studies out there about how, you know, taking defenses – that were the big defense the year before doesn't mean you're going to get a big defense this year. And if you look at my article, I did a chart. And in the chart, pretty much, and I'll read you a couple of them. So the Chiefs were the best defense in 16, but they were 4th and 15th. The Vikings were 2nd. They had been 8th. The Broncos were 3rd. They were 2nd. But after that, the Eagles jumped from 11 to 4, the Giants from 15 to 5, the Panthers went back from 3 to 6, the Ravens came up from 21st to 7th. You move down a couple picks, the Chargers were a top 10 defense. They were 29th the year before. The Dolphins were not far behind. They were 27th. They jumped from 27th to 12th. So that was the first thing that I just kind of wanted to prove the premise to the people who read the article. You know, this is why you don't draft, because defenses are so volatile. But what I found next – go ahead.
Oh, I apologize. I was just going to interject that. I think right there is the bigger point is that I feel like it's a lack of attention to detail with the community. I don't think that many people put the amount of effort into looking at the defensive roster, the additions in free agency and things that you're going to talk about later, defensive coordinator changes and things like that, the draft picks and things. You can kind of get a feel for what defense is going to improve. Like last year, I was all over the Chargers defense. I don't know what people like, why people didn't like them, but people were like, I mean, I'm a no-name guy on Twitter, but I'm talking to some people and they're just thinking I'm crazy about the Chargers defense. I'm like, man, they got really good cornerbacks and they got, Joey Bosa coming in and they have some good pieces. So taking them as your last defense, there's going to be some equity there. There's too much to like, and people just don't really pay attention. They just look at the last year's stats and just say, well, they just have a shitty defense. Sorry.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You're right. We'll cover that a little bit. Building the case here. So we all agree, I think everyone agrees, that there's a ton of volatility in picking defenses. And so I wanted to kind of do – it was only a two-year analysis because that's the only information I got off that my fantasy league gives you, and I wanted to stick to MFL10s. But I found a couple very interesting things about volatility. And I did a research on the 20-point weeks. If you get a 20-point week out of a defense in an MFL10, I mean, that's a way to really gain, your opponent might have like one defense with 3 points and another with 6 points. If you have a 20-point week, you've gained 14 points. That's pretty significant. So defenses can definitely be a weapon. So I did an analysis of the 20-point weeks, and I found out something very interesting, which is in the article, which is in 2015, 14 of the 26 20-point weeks were in the top 16. And in 2016, it was 10 of 18. So 54% one year, 56% the next of the 20-point weeks were in the top six teams. Well, there's 32 teams, so 55% versus 18. And that got me into kind of the next thought. Well, if, what makes a 20-point week, right? And off the top of your head, Joe, how do you get a 20-point week out of a defense?
Yeah, I mean, returning for a touchdown, kick return for a touchdown, interception, fumble, turnovers. But you're going to need a touchdown.
Or two.
Yeah.
And so since touchdowns are what drive this, I think that we can do an analysis of different ways that teams are more likely or less likely to get touchdowns. And the first one I came up with was winning teams. Over the last two seasons, the top six teams that I studied that had the 20-point weeks, they average 10 wins a season. And winning teams are much better position late in games to get those interceptions because the losing team is one-dimensional trying to pass to catch up. I mean, that makes sense, right?
Right, absolutely.
So you pick defenses, do you consider if you think a team is going to be a winning team or not?
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to look at that's one of the things you're going to look at, especially, sometimes those teams don't always have the best defense, like right out of the gate, like say Green Bay. But when you're picking them as like maybe your, 19th round defense or whatever, they're kind of attractive because if they're up by, 17 points in the fourth quarter and they're playing, a bad rookie quarterback or, they're going to be forcing it down the field and they'll pick six. And, in DFS, that's what you're looking for. I'm a DFS guy and you're looking for the point spread. And if you can get a double digit point spread, that the defense is probably going to have a good chance at a pick six. You know, like that's why I think the Patriots are pretty valuable. You know, teams like that that are going to be up and have good corners and have good pass rush. So yeah, definitely you gotta consider that for sure.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, there are some guys who traditionally are very good at getting interceptions. You know, if you've got a team that's a winning team and they've got some good intercepting defensive backs, that's good. But the other thing that really jumped out at me is, you know, obviously we say return men, but Tyreek Hill is a perfect example. He had 3 touchdowns on returns last year. Those 18 points made up 10% of all the Chiefs' defensive points for 2016. And that's what, you know, that those 3 is a big part of why they ended up the number one defense. So focusing on return men and return men who can break touchdowns, I think is important. One rookie who jumped out at me a little bit, who I think is going to be a returner out of the gate, is Carlos Henderson with Denver. Denver's already a good defense. And that was one rookie I thought of. But it doesn't have to be a rookie. You already kind of sent this to me, and I'll let you say his name because that's been the defense I've been on a lot of my late MFL 10s. But are there any return men who have moved to a different team that you've got your eye on?
Yeah, there's a couple, but I think the obvious one, like you were alluding to, was Cordarrelle Patterson with the Raiders. I think, you know, the price has got to be right. Like, you got to match the price with, you know, the return game. I think the Raiders defense for sure is improving. You know, they've added some really good pieces last year and then this year as well. And Cordarrelle Patterson is really the icing on the cake because, man, he's electric with a ball in his hands. We all know that he could have a Tyreek Hill like, you know, impact on the return game. I mean, he's done it before. So, I mean, that's a very attractive defense. I don't have a ton of the Raiders, not because I don't like them, but because I'm usually taking like the Jaguars when I can in like the 17th round or the Ravens in the 18th round. But the Raiders are a very strong, you know, they're going to have some big weeks, I think.
Yeah, no, I was on the Raiders last year, and, you know, I hadn't started out hot on them, and, you know, I was mixing them in a little bit. But then you look at, you know, adding Patterson, and then the other thought that came to me, and I think there's one other team that kind of fits into this mold, and it's the Jaguars. You know, a lot of times we are on teams to get better and defenses to get better for the right reasons, but it doesn't happen the year that we expect it to. And because it didn't happen the year we expected it to, it's human nature to get off of a team that didn't perform, you know, you drafted a good bit of and they underperformed. You know, it's easy to want to get off them, but both the Raiders and the Jaguars have a tremendous amount of good young talent. And I'm up to 12% on the Raiders, and I've got 15% of the Jaguars. I think both teams have key signings. One for the Jaguars I'm really high on is Calais Campbell. And just the changeover with Coughlin, I think this might be the year that the Jaguars actually take that step up. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all. Last year, you know, we can throw that last year thing out the window. I mean, they did add some pieces, and I was optimistic about them last year to an extent. But, man, let's talk about their defense this year. I mean, Calais Campbell, you nailed it. Is a game wrecker. You're putting them next to, you know, Malik Jackson and Sheldon Day and, you know, Dante Fowler is going to be coming in again this year. And that's just the D-line. But, man, their corners are just Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye. Man, those two together are elite combo plus that defensive line. Oh, my God. They're kind of like Broncos-esque, you know, if you look at their – their roster. Plus, they got Miles Jack and Telvin Smith's pretty good too. And so, I mean, they have a really strong, really strong. And I don't think anybody's really given them enough credit. I mean, I'm taking them as often as I can. The only thing about them is that their
offense. Can I interject
probably,
for a second?
Of course. Go ahead.
Can I interject just for a quick sec? I
go
actually know AJ Bouye's brother.
Is that right?
Yeah, Baba.
Baba, all right.
Baba.
Oh, Baba Bouye. Very nice, very nice. Okay, I'm throwing in a little joke there. Okay, I'm a little slow, Todd, with 1D. Okay, give me throwing these curveballs at me, Todd, with 1D. But
back to our regular schedule program.
There you go. Throwing me off my game. I already had this this flash flood. Now I got to worry, you know, start thinking about your jokes. I got to be on my toes, man. It's a good thing I got my beer. Okay, so, yeah, I mean, honestly, Jacksonville's defense is lights out. I am very confident in that. But only thing is they're going to probably slow the game down a little bit, which is going to be a lot of close games. You know, obviously trying to take the ball out of Bortles' hands a little bit, run the ball to Fournette. So I think that there'll be a lot of close, low-scoring games for Jacksonville. I think that would probably be their preference. So I don't necessarily see the what we were talking about earlier with, like, say, you know, a high-scoring team. Like, you know, I don't see that working in their favor, but still a lot of pressure, a lot of low-scoring games, you know, sacks, interceptions, things like that. So I'm very high on the Jags.
Yeah, they're being drafted as the 10th defense off the board at pick 204. So, you know, what's that? 12 goes in. I always do this wrong. Well, it's.
I mean, who do you like more than the Jags? That's my question. It's like, what defense would you take?
I can tell you. I'll read you my exposure on defenses. My number one exposure by far is Tampa Bay. They were rated very, very highly last year, and they're cheap. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm down with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, my number two is Buffalo. Buffalo is – you can sometimes get Buffalo in the 20th round, and I still think there's enough good parts there. My third one is Philadelphia. They were a top defense last year, and they got a lot of talent. And again, and then Jacksonville, Atlanta, Oakland, and Arizona are my next ones. And the one that I'm really high on that I've been picking up a lot of lately is the Rams.
Yeah, I mean I'm fine with all those. I guess my point is just I really am having a hard time thinking about a defense that's better than Jacksonville.
I think it's a great defense, but you made the other point, and we'll get back to the points in the article, is that they, you know, I don't think they have a big return guy, and I don't know that they're, even if they're in the lead, I don't know that they'll be in the, you know, let's say, you know, you can go 10-6 and not win games by more than 7 points in the NFL. So even if they win, I don't see them being that 14-point lead. But I like them as my second defense, but sometimes I'll take them as the first. You know, you mentioned key player movement. That's the other thing to keep an eye on. Joey Bosa really helped turn around the Chargers last year. The Giants' big move up the charts was followed by them signing 3 big free agents. So, you know, keep a lookout on the big player moves. You can always get depth charts now. You can get pretty much everywhere, but I still go to our lads because Dan Shanka is a great guy, and he was the first one to really start performing that service, and they do it well. And the next point is coordinator or head coaching changes. And the one that I, you know, like I mentioned the Rams, but, you know, Wade Phillips was gold for me in Denver 2 years ago. Wade Phillips is just, he's one of those guys who always gets the most out of his talent. The Rams have talent. And, you know, again, you know, I don't need to spend up for a defense because between the Jags, the Raiders, and the Rams, I feel like, man, I got three really good defenses that I can get, and the Eagles that I can get in the 18th and 19th round. Are there any big other defensive coordinator moves that you are on top of?
Honestly, you know, with any new offensive coordinators, not as much. I mean, the defenses that I'm on don't really have like a new defensive coordinator. I'm definitely usually interested in that, but like, I don't know. I'm interested in the Rams. Like you said, I love Wade Phillips, and I don't know if that's going to be a quick adjustment, man, with a 3-4 going to a 3-4. Man, EOM Rules on Twitter is my boy, and he kind of, you know, has some stats to back up the fact that Wade Phillips can turn around a defense from 4-3 to 3-4 pretty quickly. But man, I have a hard time with that. It's just enough to knock them down a little bit on my list. I still take them sometimes, but I still prefer Baltimore, and you know, I don't know. I like Baltimore and the Chargers a greater deal than the Rams.
Yeah, I need to be on the Chargers more. My one concern is that Aaron Donald is such a prototypical disruptor as in his natural position as defensive tackle. I believe they're going to make him a 3-4 end, and I just don't know that what he does is going to, you know, his big thing is that he's so quick that he can get around you into the quarterback before, you know, you even know what happens. But he's undersized, and now he's going to be dealing with these big tackles, and with, you know, and with a 3-4, you're going to end up being double teamed a lot. So I wonder if it's going to take a little bit of the wind out of Aaron Donald's sails.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's dominant. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up, Todd, is why is nobody giving any love to Baltimore at all? Like, I don't hear anybody talking about the Ravens' defense. Man, they added some nice pieces to an already solid group. But they, I mean, their secondary is damn near elite now. I mean, they're pretty – I mean, they have a stout run defense. They have a really good pass defense now with Jimmy Smith. They drafted Pumphrey, and they had they signed Brandon Carr again. They have and the best part is their safeties. They signed T.J. Jefferson to go with
Weddle,
my boy Weddle, Eric Weddle. I mean, that's a pretty amazing secondary right there. And I don't know, you make
a good point, and I was on them a little bit more early. The other thing that it didn't make it into my article, and by the way, my heart goes out to Dennis Pitta, who got hurt again today with his hip. I had picked him up and did very well with him last year. I didn't have a lot of them this year other than Dynasty, where I still owned them, but you know, I was picking them up in like the 26th round or stuff like that. But before we jump off of Baltimore, I just want to talk about that. That kind of sucks. The one question I do have with the Ravens is their pass rush. You know, Terrell Suggs is older. He's coming off a couple injuries. Brandon Williams is a very good player, but he's not a pass rushing threat. Same thing, C.J. Mosley, a really good player, but I don't see him as a, you know, right now I see their one, you know, their ends as, Suggs and Brent Urban on the draft chart, and neither one of them really jump out at me. I don't know. Is Albert McClellan a good pass rusher? Maybe he is.
I mean, Tyus Bowser. They took Tyus Bowser. You know, I think honestly, their pass rush is their weakness. You know, that's the one. That's a fair criticism of them. And they did a little bit to booster a little bit, but when you have like a fairly elite secondary or a very very good secondary, I'll try not to hyperbolize everything, but you know, they have a really good secondary, so that can, and a really stout run defense. So those two things can help their pass rush a little bit. So they're not necessarily the elite defense, but they're really good, and I think that they're being overlooked.
Yep. The other thing that it didn't make it into my article, but something that I've been postulating on, and I want to get your thought on it, and it bears more study if I can, you know, find the time to do it. I did some basic research, and I'll tell you the defense that I came up with. You know, we talk about interceptions, and I went and I looked at quarterback interceptions over the last 2 years. I averaged them out, you know, figuring that if you're playing quarterbacks that throw a lot of interceptions, you're obviously going to have a better chance of getting return touchdowns. And if you're in a division with a couple guys who throw a lot of interceptions, that's a big advantage, especially if you're a pretty good defense. And the one division that really jumped out at me as having a lot of interceptions and the team that could take advantage of it is the Cincinnati Bengals. Both as good as Ben is, he throws a lot of picks. Joe Flacco throws a lot of picks. And I can only guess that whoever is going to quarterback Cleveland this year is going to be ripe for throwing a lot of interceptions. That's six games where, you know, these quarterbacks average almost two interceptions a game. You know, maybe more like one and a half. So that's the latest thing that I've been focusing on. And I do think it bears more study. But I wish I was one of these numbers guys like Mike Beers or Fantasy HDH, you know, who are really good with that kind of stuff. Because I do think there's a way to plot predictive interceptions and run it through teams' full schedule and kind of get an idea of what defenses might be the ones who get a lot of interceptions this year.
Yeah, just real quick caveat. I needed to correct how terrible I am. So if you don't mind, Marlon Humphrey was the draft pick I was trying to mention. And I think I said TJ Jefferson, Tony Jefferson. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm still waterlogged. I apologize to your listeners. I need another beer to get this prepared.
Well, one could argue the one thing you don't need is another beer.
Oh man, Todd, I do, man, I do. I'm only one and a half in. I'm just getting started.
Ought to be young, you know. I'm 54, mm-hmm. and I can go 3-4 months without drinking a beer or having alcohol. And it's not that I don't like it. It's just that I'm old and tired, and I just don't. You know, and I'm a pretty happy guy.
I know, it's about your bedtime. We need to get you to bed here in a minute. No, I'm kidding. Hey,
we're getting close. The problem with doing a podcast starting at 9 o'clock is after I do a podcast, I'm always wired. But at least it's a Friday night. If I stay up past my bedtime and my curfew and my backup curfew, then, you know, I won't have to pay for it too bad. But it's funny because in the old days, you know, I'd stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning trying to make trades and just really working to make trades in my simulation leagues, and people would be like, "Are you still trying to make trades? It's 2 a.m. I'm like, "Well, you were on instant message." I don't have the energy I used to, Joe.
You are a wild man. Hey, so real quick, I wanted to go back. You're talking about something I think correlated with the Patriots. So the Patriots are in a division where I think you could take advantage of them. Their second half of their schedule is so cake. I mean, they play the Jets twice. They play the Bills twice. They play, you know, the Dolphins, which, you know, they're not horrible. But, I mean, they have a really cupcake division. They play the second half of their schedule is so, so money. They're, you know, going to be up in games. So I think the Patriots are going to be a defense you're going to want to look into and tap into because I think they're going to have some big weeks. They have added Stephen Gilmore to already having Malcolm Butler, you know, and they have a pretty decent defense to begin with. And, you know, they have, pretty good secondary. So I think the Patriots are a team to target as well.
Yeah. And they have an ADP of 187. when you look at Denver going at 156, I mean, I have zero Denver this year. And then KC and Houston are literally tied at 171.18. Then Seattle, and I don't get that defense. I know historically they're so good, but I don't see it as much. And then Minnesota, New England, and then Arizona's a pretty good value also. I have a good bit of them at 189. My Giants are at 197. My concern with the Giants is last year they had the cake of all cake schedules, and this year they've got one of the toughest schedules, and I just don't think that defense is going to be as good as it was last year. Any thoughts on the Giants?
I was real high on the Giants last year. They were a good value. You know, I don't have any problems with the Giants necessarily, but I think the NFC East is pretty competitive. I don't know. They are somebody that I'm looking at in that, 18th round and stuff. But I do prefer, the teams I mentioned before, you already know. I prefer them. But the Giants, I'm good with, too. They have a good run defense. They lost Hankins, though, right? So that kind of hurts. But, yeah, they have a good pass defense, good pass rush, good run defense. So they're not bad either. They're somebody I'm taking as well, but not as high as the others.
Yeah, I've got a few shares, but not nearly as much as I would have. All right, so the last subject on defense, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but it's the 20th round. You either need a second defense or want a third defense. Out of the teams that you regularly see in the last round, give me a couple names of defenses you're interested in and why.
So I believe my highest owned defense is actually the Tennessee Titans.
Tuxedos?
Yeah, the Tuxedos. The Tennessee Titans are a team that I've targeted in like the 20th round. And I'm fine with that. I'm not, like I said, I don't usually target defenses. Sometimes, like I said, sometimes I only take one defense occasionally. I have a few of those, but I don't always recommend that. It's occasionally, it's something I'm testing out, but I won with it before. So, I'm going to give it a shot. If you got a solid roster and, you want to shoot for the stars, why not? No, but the Tennessee Titans defense is a little bit underrated in my opinion. They have an underrated pass rush with Derek Morgan and Brian Arakpo. They have, Sylvester Williams signed as a nose tackle, and Jarrell Casey is really an above average to really good defensive lineman. He doesn't get enough credit. They added some pieces. They added Logan Ryan. They added Cyprian. He's more maybe like a run defense. But they have, the Titans as a whole are getting better. Their game script is positive. They're going to be kind of like – they're not going to be anywhere close to the Jaguars defense, but what I'm saying is that they're going to have a lot of close games. They're going to be in a lot of good games, and I think that defense is good enough, especially for, your last defense. I mean, I think they're better than a lot of the ones that are going in the last, couple rounds. And so I'm pretty good with the Titans.
Yeah, I that's a defense I agree with you. I took them in a dynasty league last year, and I do think that they're improving and they'll continue to do it. I only have two shares of them out of 65. I mentioned Buffalo, I have a lot, and Cincinnati surprisingly is around in the 20th round at times, Tampa sometimes, but the one that I've kind of been focused on is the Miami Dolphins. And the Dolphins were a pretty good defense last year. They've got, Cameron Wake and a bunch of, pretty good talent on that defense. I'm trying to look for, they were the 12th ranked defense last year. And, in the 20th round, if I can get 8.1 points per game that they gave me last year, I'm pretty good with that. So that's a team that I'll take sometimes in the 20th round. So I think we've given the the good folks out there listening to good options. And then the last discussion for our night is, Joe, are you a two-defense guy or a three-defense guy, or does it depend upon how your draft is going?
I'm generally never a three-defensive guy. I think I might have – I don't think I've taken a third defense at all this year, and I do have probably five one-defensive teams just because I'm YOLO, Pano. I'm a two defense guy, maybe a one defense guy. I won the Power Hour League with one defense. I pride myself on that, even though it was not exactly intentional. I did intend at the end when I kind of knew what I was going up against, I decided to go for it. But no, I think honestly it depends on your draft. Definitely not three defense. That's just my opinion. If you're good at taking defenses, you shouldn't need a third.
Well, you know, it's funny. My first year of doing this, I listened to the Fantasy Feast. Jason Rock Phelps was out, and he talked about how percentage-wise it was better to take three defenses. He also talked about how it's, you know, with bye weeks and things of that nature, it's better to take three defenses. And I thought about it recently, and again, we're trying to get those 20-point weeks. If you have an extra defense, you have one more chance of getting that really big week, because unlike some other positions, when you look at who else goes late in draft, it's very rare that someone you take in that 18th, 19th round turns into something historically. It happens, but, you know, we all know when you're taking a team that, you know, when you're taking a player that late, that it's a lottery pick, right? So I've always been a three defense guy, and then I changed when it came time to do pre-NFL draft. I felt like there were so many questions out there, and I re-looked at the numbers that Mike Beers had, and it was over the last couple of years, three defenses have been on more winning teams than two, but it's a less than 1% difference. And I thought to myself, well, if I'm So to make a long story short, I still think ideally three defenses are better, but it really depends on how I feel when I get to that decision. Do I feel like I've got all the running backs I need? Do I feel like I've got all the wide receivers? I almost always want three tight ends because of the volatility at that position. I almost always just have two quarterbacks. So if...
Right.
If I feel like my team is strong, and there's nobody who's such a good value on the board that I feel that I need to take them, you know, sometimes that's the decision making. Someone's there that you feel should have went 2-3 rounds earlier, and you're like, well, I ain't taking a defense. I'll take a 7th running back or an 8th wide receiver because this guy's just too good to pass on. So if for me now, it really depends. I'm open to how my draft flows. I'm definitely always going to have two defenses. But I let the decision kind of come to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's important to self-audit, you know, yourself and your strengths, your weaknesses. You know, a lot of people, you know, maybe they're not as confident, and maybe rightfully so, in their picking defenses. You know, like you said, it's very volatile year to year. With me, I feel like it's something I enjoy, you know, analyzing, and I usually have pretty good, you know, results in comparison to the field. So I really feel confident in doing two, and occasionally I'll do one depending on the scenario. You know, I don't think there's a wrong answer. You know, it just depends on your strengths and your weaknesses and who's there. But honestly, for me, I don't see a huge upside in taking three defenses when, you know, there's players I still really like in that 16th, 17th, 18th round. You know, and for me, I have a pretty clear strategy usually. So it's usually a non-negotiable, but
yeah,
I can see why people
and
would do that.
Well, and see that you bring up a very important point. I think, you know, when I first heard, well, three defenses are better than two, well, you know, I went with three. But in really looking at the numbers, if it's less than 1% difference, between a 2-defense team and a 3-defense team, and it's, chance, and we're talking over the last 3 years, that it's less than 1% more that 3-team defenses win over 2, well, then that team defense that I'm going to pick really has to be the best pick for me at that time, right? So at that point, it's not a decision on whether I want 2 defenses or 3. It's a decision of whether I think that defense is a better choice than who I could otherwise get.
Right. And I mean, there's even more that goes into it because, you may have drafted like a hyper-fragile running back, you may have like 3 or 4 running backs or something like that. And maybe you feel comfortable grabbing that last running back or something like just to boost that, or, there's a lot of different scenarios, but with a defense, you know that they're not going to get hurt. Like a defense as a whole is not going to get hurt and be a scratch. You know what I mean? So I feel pretty weird burning 3 roster spots on a defense, where running backs get injured like that. Running backs are obviously very fragile. So having, or tight ends, like you said, I would definitely not recommend taking 2 tight ends because they get hurt pretty, they're very involved in the blocking game, the middle of the field, getting hit by safeties at the knees, things like that. I mean, that's a very fragile position. So I don't want to burn 3 roster spots on a defense that, is kind of limited upside as well as that they're not going to get hurt. Like, I don't have to worry about them. You know what I mean? So I don't really see it, but I understand why some people do.
Yep. And, your logic was my original logic that I had been working on 2 years ago before I heard Jason Rock Phelps on The Feast, and that's exactly it. Well, defenses don't get hurt. Why do I need 3 of them? I might have an injury at running back or wide receiver. But, again, I got to feel like that running back or wide receiver I'm going to take in the 20th round. Like, for a while, it was a no-brainer. If Shane Vereen was in the 20th round, I'm taking Shane Vereen over the Dolphins' defense. But, again, now it's more like, well, what 2 defenses did I get? What 5 running backs or 6 running backs do I have? And I'll sum it up by saying this. I don't think statistically there's a right way or a wrong way to do it, so use your best instincts and pick your last defense. So I think that'll wrap it up for us today, Joe. Once again, I thank you for coming on and doing the pod.
Yeah, Todd, thanks for having me. We've done it, like, what is this, the 4th time now, maybe
3rd or 4th, and I want to have you back on. I'd like to kind of go over that other MFL 10 article I did on supercharging. So maybe we'll get you on to do that. I've been so busy trying to do writing, which doesn't come as natural to me. I haven't really been asking guests on. So when you're free and I'm free, hey, we got some topics to talk about.
Hey, I'll always make it work. Like I said, I mean, I took my I traveled across a river. I got here and, after hours and hours of trying to make it home to be on this pod, I'll make it happen. I wasn't as prepared as I would have liked to be. I would have liked to have all my spreadsheets and I would have liked to have Mike Beerswater on my right, so I could have, consulted with him before I answered, things like that. But, I'm happy with it. And this is our, this has become a little regular thing. So thanks for having me on. I always appreciate it.
No worries. And again, really glad to have you on. As I always do, I will send us out with a song, and I'm going to pick which one I all right, this is by a band called James, and it's called Getting Away With It. So Andy Reid, the gangster who got away with going to Jeremy Macklin's wedding and then cutting his ass oops, I'm not supposed to curse on this pod, and cutting his butt 2 weeks later. To the gangster Andy Reid, you got away with it. Have a good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Are you aching for the blade? That's okay. We're insured. Are you aching?